Of late, we've heard an awful lot about the far right being a threat, but is it really bigger than the threat that we face from Islamist extremism as we have for the past two decades? Hi, this is Phil Gursky, President and CEO of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting in Russell, Ontario, Canada. Listen to Canadian Intelligence, a podcast about national security and public safety. You're probably getting tired of hearing me say this, but when it pound for pound or kilo for kilo here in the metric system, the single greatest threat to public safety and national security on a global scale is that produced by Islamist extremists or jihadis. They carry out by far the vast majority of terrorist attacks. The numbers are there. The facts are there. You don't have to take my word for it. Simply do a scan of the news on a daily basis. And yet in recent years, here in Canada and elsewhere, there's been a pushback to suggest that perhaps it's the far right we should be worried about. And while there's no question the far right has risen in lethality in the past couple of years, I would agree, is it really that much bigger than Islamist terrorism? And more importantly, is this shift in focus making us less safe? To weigh on this and other matters, I'm delighted to bring back to the podcast Ian Atchison, a former prisoner governing the United Kingdom and also a senior advisor to the Counter-Extremism Project, who was with me on a podcast a little more than a year ago, January 2022. And we're going to walk through these issues. So Ian, welcome back to the podcast again, my friend.
Thank you very much, Phil. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
I came across a fascinating piece of information, Ian, about a week ago. And the title was PREVENT. So PREVENT is the United Kingdom's kind of star CVE program. It says, PREVENT, far-right referrals outnumber Islamic extremism for the second year running. Now, up until a couple of years ago, I know that within your country, United Kingdom, that from a terrorism perspective, the greatest threat was, of course, that's that of Islamist extremism. MI5, the British Security Service, a great partner of ours at CSIS for years, would say publicly that they had well north of 20,000 people of interest, several dozen ongoing threat-to-life plots that were credible. How is it we got to this point where, in terms of people being referred to PREVENT, now it's a CVE program, it's an early prevention program. Have we really seen that much of a turnaround in the last couple of years?
Well, it's a really good question. And you're right to make the distinction between PREVENT, I think, and the other elements of our national counterterrorism strategy. I think that distinction has grown far too wide in recent years. And that's something to do with the skew in statistics versus reality, or lethality, if you like, that we're seeing with these referrals. So just to be clear to your listeners, PREVENT is part of our contest strategy, our counterterrorism strategy.
The purpose of
PREVENT is to stop people being drawn into violent extremism, terrorism. And it differs from the other elements because it is, as you've said, the kind of front-end triage system where professionals can make referrals to the PREVENT program about people who they believe are at risk of being drawn into violent extremism. And in the United Kingdom, that's backed up by a legislative responsibility called the PREVENT Duty, which mandates public officials from our police, healthcare, and education systems and so on to make those referrals. Now, I think the statistics said that the last time they came out, the official statistics on referrals said for the previous year to the 31st of March of last year, there were 1,230-odd referrals owing to concerns related to extreme right-wing radicalization. And that number exceeded, I think, the number of people who referred for Islamist extremist ideologies. I think that was roughly about 1,064. And that change in emphasis has come around only over the last couple of years or so. So I suppose logically you would assume that if these referrals are increasing, it reflects perhaps in reality an increasing threat from neo-fascism or neo-Nazi white supremacism and so on.
A real dog's breakfast of actors.
But that certainly has not translated into reality. So something else might be going on here. And it's concerning. And we might get on to PREVENT because the PREVENT review led by William Shawcross is due to report imminently, and has quite a lot to say about the mismatch between the amount of people being referred and the actual threat that is posed to national security in this country. But basically, I think part of the problem is that the narrative of the threat posed by extreme right-wing terrorism and ideology has been talked up. Now, why has it been talked up? I think because there have been concerns in our official security establishment, if you like, that the emphasis on the threat, which is certainly in this country, in terms of the statistics, in terms of the disrupted late-stage plots, in terms of those in custody, in terms of the arrests that are being made, still significantly by some way the threat from Islamist extremism.
Right.
That's the preeminent threat. But why in this case have the numbers of referrals for Prevent be not reflecting that, you know, that reality? And I think there's been some discomfort amongst the official security establishment that this dichotomy in terms of the threat is causing problems, is looking like stigmatization of a particular community, in this case, the Muslim community. Mm-hmm. So there's been a fairly relentless attempt, I think, to talk up the problem of extreme right-wing ideology and terrorism. Now, both of us aren't saying, you and I, Phil, aren't saying that neo-Nazi extremism isn't a threat.
Of course
and
not.
Of course, we have had examples in this country where that threat has come, you know, has resolved itself into the murder of people on our streets, outside a mosque, for example, and mm-hmm. The murder of Joe Cox.
And here at CAD as well, yeah.
Yeah, and elsewhere as well. So I'm not denying the issue. But if you look at the scale and the sophistication and the lethality of Islamist extremism, I think what we've got here is an attempt, maybe a well-meaning attempt, to create a kind of false equivalency in the threat. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, if you look worldwide, who are the people that are murdered the most by Islamist extremists? And of course, the answer is Muslims.
Are the Muslims, yeah. Yes. Are the Muslims, yeah.
So if we misrepresent this threat, we're actually exposing people potentially to more harm because our eye is taken off the ball. Now, one of the other problems about this misperception and its its constant sort of production into the official narrative that, you know, one side is as bad as the other, is that it has generated an enormous surge of quite ludicrous referrals relating to extreme right-wing radicalization into Prevent, which I think has had the effect of overwhelming and disempowering the officials, the good people, and there are many good people who work as Prevent practitioners. So they're so concentrating on this right-wing phenomenon, this chimera, basically, that they are failing to spot maybe some of the black swans, as it were, who are sailing past them. Right. And, you know, there are a lot of people, and, you know, this will go across ideologies, but particularly in relation to the statistics that we are seeing coming out. There are a lot of young men in particular that are at risk of being securitized because of, you know, absurd suspicions that they're getting drawn into terrorism on the basis of something they might have said or something that's been misunderstood by a teacher in a classroom.
Well, there's a really good example, Ian, that you give in an article that I'll put for the Times, and it's that in one case, an 11-year-old was referred to Prevent after a teacher mistook alms for arms. The teacher had asked the class what they would do if they had a lot of money. The boy said he would give alms to the oppressed. The teacher interpreted his arms and referred this kid to Prevent. Like, this is a simple misunderstanding of what a person said, and yet it becomes a referral. This is ludicrous, is it not?
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, one of the key ways that Prevent must be reformed is we've got to stop this mission creep that seems to be encompassing sad, insecure, and inadequate young people and bringing them into the ambit of our counterterrorism strategy. I mean, how does that make sense when we've got scarce resources and we've got a known, quantifiable, and lethal threat that is posed in the main by Islamist extremism? I mean, I've characterized this approach before, as I probably said on your program when I was on about a year ago, Phil, as institutional timidity. It's the kind of path of least resistance where officials will always and ever want to say, well, the threat is symmetrical, one side is as bad as the other. And, you know, as I've said, that serves nobody, and it's dangerous. It's a dangerous complacency, which, you know, will allow, you know, bad actors to get past. We've got a very poor record here in detecting disguise, compliance, deception by terrorist offenders or those who have been scooped up by Prevent. I think in that article we mentioned that, you know, of the most significant 11 terrorist events in this country in recent years, six of them have been committed by people who've had prior encounters and connections with Prevent. So, you know, there are a lot of people on the other side who are the detractors of Prevent who will say this is a securitized, oppressive attempt to control the Muslim community through fear and through characterizing them as you know, all as you know, potential suspects in terrorism. I mean, nothing could be further from the truth. But I think one thing the detractors and the supporters of Prevent as a concept will agree on is that it simply isn't working.
Right, right. Now, you use an interesting phrase there, Ian, institutional timidity. I love that phrase. I'm going to steal it from you if that's okay. You're talking to a Canadian here where I have a government that can't even utter the phrase Islamist extremism. They use religiously motivated violent extremism, which suggests to me that the Mennonites, the Amish, pose as much of a threat to us as Islamist extremists do. And I keep saying, when's the last time you saw a Mennonite suicide bomber? Well, first of all, they all, you know, ride horses and buggies. They're not very effective. So you've been very polite so far, Ian. You've been rather restrained in your comments. I'm gonna push you a little bit. Is this just political correctness gone wild? Like you said, there are some well-intentioned, well-meaning people. We both know who they are. We're doing the best job that they can. But when we're forcing to look at this problem through that lens of, well, we can't offend anybody, it seems we're entering an era in Western society where, you know, microaggressions and people are offended by the simplest possible phrase. This can't end well, right? I mean, are we going to get to a point, and I don't want you to predict, Ian, I'm not asking you look in your crystal ball, but are we getting to a point where this way of looking at this problem is going to end up where we're going to miss something because we've been told, well, we don't want you looking at that as much anymore because it stigmatizes the community?
Well, you know, you're inviting me to be rude, but you know, I'm not sure what value it is in talking about, you know, political correctness gone mad, because that phrase has lost all its meaning. But what I would say is, you know, maybe we could agree on liberal authoritarianism, because it is ironic, isn't it, that this sort of institutional timidity, this sort of desire to equate the problem of far-right and Islamist ideologies into a comfortable kind of blob of one's as bad as the other, the effect of that through the agencies, through our counterterrorism agencies, is the securitizing of a growing number of young people for thoughts that will never translate into actions. Exactly. And again, as I've said, that's a waste of time and scarce resources, and is quite dangerous. A lot of the people are being scooped up by Prevent at the moment because of a kind of confected moral panic over extreme right-wing terrorism, which has never resolved in this country, principally because we think fascists are ludicrous, and we always have done, right back from, you know, Oswald Mosley onwards.
Right.
And we're predominantly I'm going to show my age here, a decent people who follow the rules in the United Kingdom. So, you know, I think we've got well-meaning people who have projected us into this space, you know, where we're not too far behind the Canadian example that you gave, I think, of simply being petrified to actually name the problem.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. And what my hope is this week that the Shawcross review will come out, and it will be an opportunity for politicians, if they want to grasp it, to be able to reset our Prevent strategy completely and say, instead of being, I've described it as a sort of creche for disaffected young people, you know, we need to focus on where the harm is. You know, for one of the interesting things is about the statistics, that the average age of the terrorist offender who's banged up at the minute in UK custody, overwhelmingly those are Islamist extremists, by the way,
right?
Is about 33.
Okay.
But yet we're securitizing growing numbers of young people.
11-year-olds.
And you're 17, 18, 19-year-olds. Now, there's no question that some of those people without an intervention are actually, you know, quite likely to become harmful in some respect. But often the intervention that's needed is not a national security intervention. It is, further back in their development, a mental health intervention, a psychological intervention.
Yep.
Again, one of the damaging and worrying things about the mission creep in PREVENT is that they're inventing new categories now that they're measuring. So, for example, incels is now being measured as a specific category.
Don't get me started on incels, Ian. Please don't go down that road.
Well, I think it's important in relation to PREVENT's business, and it's one of the fastest growing categories. But often these people who are categorized as incels will be, and there's another really bizarre category of people who've been triaged and pose no counterterrorism risk. Mm-hmm. So those people, why are they even in the ambit at all? Well, we've got a problem here, and actually incels is a good example, because that, of course, is not a coherent ideology, a political ideology, as is Islamist extremism, as is the white supremacist neo-fascist ideologies. It's just a collection of sad and inadequate individuals who are enraged, if I can be blunt about this, by the fact they can't get laid.
Yeah.
Now, let's just look at that for a second, because I am not suggesting that some of these people, their thoughts don't translate into murderous action. And of course, the awful tragedy we had in Plymouth last year, when a young man murdered his mother and then four other individuals before killing himself with a shotgun and marauded around the community and absolutely terrorized them. I mean, that is appalling. But people are quite, on the basis of that, there's been an enormous kind of push from the left predominantly to get incels described as a particular terrorist category.
Yes, same.
And I think
Canada.
Again that completely misses the point. Some of these people need help, and some of them definitely need to be controlled. But the incel incident in Plymouth that I'm describing, that appalling incident, was actually a failure of police gun licensing. It was a failure of our primary care GP system to be able to communicate concerns to the police. These are system failures. They're not national security failures, as tragic as those failures were. So again, we need to get PREVENT cleaned out of all these people who are now gumming up the system. We certainly need, as William Shawcross, I think, is going to suggest in his review, properly experienced counterterrorism professionals chairing PREVENT meetings. I mean,
absolutely.
I would want to go further. I would want the complete nationalization of the program, because at the moment, as you probably are aware, it's a creature, if you like, of our local authorities.
Yeah.
And some of our local authorities have a political complexion and have people within those authorities working with PREVENT who are, not convinced about the, at best, about the philosophical kind of importance of PREVENT, and at worst, seem to work against it. And I think the report is going to illustrate some of those problems that we have. And I've described PREVENT before as a parish council solution to a national security problem. PREVENT needs to be nationalized. It needs to be, in my view, it needs to be professionalized. It needs to be much more narrowly focused on real harm. Who are the people who are going to become the next generation
of
jihadists, or indeed the next generation of extreme right-wing terrorists?
Exactly.
How can we spot them better? And when we do spot them, what is it that we can do? But of course, that's a subset. We're still picking up people in PREVENT who ought to have been spotted, much further upstream, even if we do all those things that I've suggested might happen with reforming PREVENT. But we're still not stopping them at the right point. So we've got some really difficult societal questions to answer here, which is beyond the purview of a counterterrorism program. It's about, for example, why is there a massive overrepresentation with young Muslim men in our prisons? It's to do with why are there communities that are still, where there are people, second or third generation British Muslims, in particular young people, living parallel lives to the rest of society. What impact does economic regeneration have in creating the circumstances and a narrative where there are different options to live a good life other than martyrdom, to be blunt about it. So there's lots of big questions that need to be answered as well. But we have got to make a start somewhere. And I think starting with a root and branch reform of Prevent is the right place.
I'm looking very forward to William Thawcross's review of Prevent and to see what he has to say. But I want to pick up on the last point, Ian. Now, I'm quoting you from an article that just came out. In fact, it's today, February the 6th. It's in the Times of London. The title is "Sack Civil Servants Who Gave Funding to Islamist Extremists," says expert. You are quoted as saying that, in fact, anyone from the Home Office who decided to fund groups that have spread, and they use the word Islam, I use the word Islamist, doesn't really matter, extremism, should be sacked. And he says that, some Muslim organizations, individuals, are actually promoting extremist narratives and they're getting funding from the government. So how in heaven's name does that happen? We know that the vast majority of British Muslims, Canadian Muslims, American Muslims are just average citizens. They're not extremists. But we do know that there are centers and individuals that do spread extremist messages. How is it that these organizations are being funded by the UK government in the first place?
Well, Phil, just to be clear, I don't write the headlines.
I know.
and what I've actually said is that the officials, we need to follow the money, basically. If, as is expected, there are examples of Prevent funding, which often gets dispersed to communities for various well-meaning programs. But if there is evidence, and the leaks suggest that Shawcross has got evidence that some of this funding is going to people who are associated with, or at worst, who are advocating violent extremists or defending them, then that's clearly, that's a fairly major breakdown in what the Prevent funding was intended for, which was to promote community cohesion, not to enable people to do the opposite and promote hatred and division. So what I've said is that, and journalists, I hope will do this, that we need to follow the money. If there have been examples of no due diligence taking place and groups being funded whose aims and values and output is antithetical to the promotion of liberal democratic values, then what the hell were the people in charge doing allowing this to take place? We need more information about that. And obviously we need to hear a response or a defense from those. I'm afraid I'm not going to be terribly impressed by, we just weren't aware of some of the things these people were saying. This is what government is supposed to do. This is what civil servants are supposed to do with the disbursement of, what is taxpayers' money.
Exactly.
And I think the likely emergence of incidents where public money is being given to people who support violent extremism, that's going to be outrageous, and that does demand a proper response from government and proper accountability. And perhaps, in the end, it's going to, result in this, some people being sacked. We don't have a great track record for public officials being sacked for doing things badly.
Neither do we.
Ironically, some of them get promoted. but I am biased with the Ministry of Justice in that regard.
Right. Ian, last question. We've talked a lot about Prevent and the William Shawcross's review of it. I'm just curious, maybe you have proprietary information that I don't have. What do you expect the review to say? And what do you expect the response to the review will be on multiple sides of UK society? Are people going to say, are they going to reject the findings? Are they going to find that the findings go against the message they're trying to sell? What do you expect to happen in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think the report will be extremely controversial, and it was never going to be otherwise, particularly when you had a coalition of organizations and pressure groups and activist groups who are opposed to Prevent, getting their kicks in early and saying they'd have nothing to do with the review. And, it was just going to rubber stamp, the oppression of, particularly the Muslim community.
Right.
So I think we need to wait and see what the review actually says. I mean, we've seen some leaks. I'm afraid I don't claim any special knowledge of what exactly it's going to contain. But the things that I've mentioned, are likely to be in it. You know, criticism of these groups mm-hmm. and the officials who've supplied them with money to oppose British values, the need for more focus on harm and a reduction in the false equivalence and what that means in terms of throughput for prevention with Islamist extremism and far-right extremism, because they are very asymmetrical threats.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's quite a lot going on there. And, you know, William Shawcross has, at some cost to his own reputation, produced this report. And I very, very much hope that, to answer your last point, that ministers are robust in saying, we accept the recommendations, we will implement this, and we will change things. Because prevent as it is not fit for purpose in spotting those black swans, if you like, that are sailing by as people are preoccupied with sad and inadequate teenagers.
Well, I guess we're going to have to wait and find out what the review says, Ian. But listen, I want to thank you for coming back on the podcast. It's been far too long since I've had you on. I've got a sneaking suspicion I need to bring you on more frequently rather than less frequently. But thank you for weighing in on a very important issue. And I think pushing back against some of the narratives that have been growing in your country and my country, that the real threat has somehow been diminished and that this false threat, it's real, but it's not as big as they say it is gaining ground. So listen, sir, I thank you again for being on the podcast, and we'll talk again soon.
An absolute pleasure, Phil. Good to talk.
That was my conversation with Ian Atchison of the United Kingdom. What do you think about this notion that perhaps these ideas that the far right is surpassing Islamist terrorism are having effects on government programs and, by extension, having effect on the security service? Love to hear your feedback. You can reach me on email, borealisrisk@gmail.com, or on Twitter @BorealisSaves. You also find me on LinkedIn and on Facebook. If you like the content, want to get more, go to the website, borealisthreatenrisk.com, hit the subscribe button. It's free of charge. All the blogs and podcasts can be sent to your inbox. Love to hear your feedback on this and other matters, maybe ideas for other guests. We'll talk again soon. Until then, stay safe.